This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and let's jump right into our week in review, starting with the battle for the 7th Congressional District here in Massachusetts. Challenger City Councilor Ayanna Pressley said at a debate this week that the 7th needs a new activist voice.
What this district deserves and what these times require is activist leadership, someone that will be a movement and a coalition builder, because ultimately a vote on the floor of Congress will not defeat the hate coming out of that White House. Only a movement can.
But 10-term incumbent Congressman Michael Capuano defended his long record in the House, saying that with time comes expertise.
It does take a while to learn how to get things done in Congress. I've been there for a while, and my record speaks for itself. My record both of not just voting the right way, but also advocating for the right things, pushing for the right items, both nationally and locally.
However, Ayanna Pressley says votes are not enough.
Seniority and leadership can't just be defined by number of years served or how you vote. It's about impact in this district.
On the other hand, Capuano says advocacy and votes do go hand in hand.
Votes are important. And by the way, when Democrats are in the majority, we brought health care to 20 million people.
So obviously the big question here is, what does this race say about the direction that the Democratic Party as a whole might go? So joining me now to discuss that is Tom Nichols. He's a professor of national security affairs at the U.S. Naval War College in Newport, Rhode Island. He's also a professor at the Harvard Extension School. Tom Nichols, it's great to see you. Welcome.
It's great to be back with you, Meghna.
It's good to have you here as part of our Week in Review team. Also with us is Tiziana Deering. She's a professor and co-director at the Center for Social Innovation at Boston College. She's also a member of WBUR's Executive Advisory Board. Tiziana, it's good to see you again.
Thanks. Good to be here.
All right. So Tiziana, let me just start with you. We had a pretty raucous debate sponsored by WBUR, The Globe, and UMass Boston between Capuano and Pressley this week. I mean, what do you make of this race so far?
Yeah, it was a raucous and healthy debate. And what I thought several times while I was listening to it is, actually, this is really good for the 7th District of Massachusetts, and this is really good for Massachusetts as a whole. It was a tense, respectful debate, but these are strong candidates with good track records who, if you're a Democrat, are both going to care about issues that are bread and butter for you, and it's healthy to have this kind of contest. And I was really impressed with both of them, and the sort of dividing lines, Meghna, that they were highlighting are the ones. I mean, this is a microcosm of the challenge that we're going to have in the passing of baton and leadership in this country over and over again in the decades to come.
Mm. Now, the 7th in Massachusetts is the state's only majority-minority congressional district, and so that's something that we asked Councillor Pressley about whether or not race is a factor in this election, and here's what she said.
Race is a factor in everything. Representation does matter. That is not the impetus for my run, but I'm not going to pretend that representation doesn't matter. It matters because it informs the issues that are spotlighted and emphasized, and it leads to more innovative and enduring solutions.
Now, on the other hand, once again, Congressman Capuano responded by saying he agrees that race matters, but he also said his experience is what matters.
Certainly, first of all, agree that race does matter, as does gender, as does gender identity. Of course they matter. That's why we fight so hard for civil rights and human rights, to make sure that society embraces differences amongst us and recognizes that differences are okay.
Now, Tom Nichols, being a resident of Rhode Island, I'm going to give you a pass on saying that if you have any details on the race here in the 7th. But really, I think one of the reasons why it's actually garnered a lot of national attention is because there is this question about the direction the Democratic Party is going to go. We had other races this week that I think say that, you know, not everyone is getting on the advocacy bandwagon.
Right. And I should add, by the way, that I cut my teeth in politics by working for a few years in the Massachusetts State House, because, of course, I am a native son of the Commonwealth, just living to the south for now. And I should remind everybody I don't represent the Navy in anything I'm saying. You know, as one of these apostate never Trump Republicans who is wishing the Democrats well and wants to, I'm one of the people like George Will, like Michael Gerson, like others who have said that the only way out of this is for the Democrats to win in November. And so I want the Democrats to do well. I worry about the degree to which these kinds of issues become nationalized. I think that's been a consistent mistake that the Democratic Party, which, let's face it, has hemorrhaged 1,000 seats over the past 10 years at all levels of government. I mean, it has been a wipeout of Democratic seats that I think was obscured by the popularity of Barack Obama. It's something that was easy to forget because Obama was so popular. That's in part because the Democrats make the mistake of nationalizing these issues. I mean, that's practically a Republican ad to have a Democratic candidate say everything is about race.
Okay. Well, but let me ask you, though. I mean, nationalizing certain issues, isn't that exactly what the Republican Party has been doing for many election cycles?
I would say if you look at what the Republicans were doing in much more productive races at the city, state, regional level, that's where they were really building the party apparatus. And there was, at least until this past few years, a much bigger tent among the Republicans. Sort of as long as you voted for the caucus, you got a pass on other things. I think Republicans were better about not purity testing each other out of existence at those lower levels.
I don't know about that, TTI.
Well, I also don't feel that this was a nationalized issue. I mean, you've got a black woman running against a white man in a majority-minority district where the majority of the voters are white, but the majority of the residents are black. So, of course, it's partly about race. We can't ignore the fact that Ayanna Pressley is an African-American woman and Mike Capuano is a white man. At the same time, you know, in my classes, I used to teach protest 2 or 3 years ago and advocacy, social action like that, and my students would treat it as a history lesson. When I treat it in class now, they treat it like what they did last weekend, right? So the younger base is moving in a new direction, and we will experience these tensions, I think, on the progressive side of the aisle for a while, but this is inevitable, and I think this is a truly local race that is being cast into a national spotlight, but is about the 7th district.
I can't tell you how strange it is to me, though, as somebody who's even – I actually worked for the Democrats when I was a younger man in my misspent youth in the State House. But I can't tell you how strange it is to me after years of being on the other side to see Michael Capuano, you know, being suspect as not being progressive enough.
Mm. Oh, but I don't think that's what this is about. I don't think it's about whether he's progressive enough. I think it's about – and I think – Councilwoman Pressley said this in the debate. It's about how you go at getting the laws passed. I really don't hear it as a fight about who's more progressive, but I do hear it as a discussion about how lived experience affects your intention and attention when you bring yourself to the floor.
I'm sorry. I think that exactly captures a lot of the debate in America today, to say you have to have this lived experience in order to be authentic. I think this divides a lot of voters to say, you know, Michael Capuano may have been I have no dog in this fight either regionally or politically, other than to say, you know, of course a Democrat is going to win the 7th district. But an important division that's taking place right now, to say it doesn't matter if you're a 10-term Republican if you are not representative demographically of this district. I mean, we just saw that happen in New York with the same situation. And to me, I mean, I understand, you know, ethnic politics. I mean, in an earlier generation, it was Polish Catholics, Italians, others saying we want to have representatives from our community. On the other hand, I think internecine warfare over this at a time when I think that there's a much more existential danger isn't productive.
Let me just jump in here, because about the 7th in particular, I mean, this is actually something, you know, Michael Capuano called it, he said it's unfortunate there has to be a family fight here. But I still wonder, well, when you have the power of incumbency like you do in a blue state like Massachusetts, when are we ever going to get new voices? It'll always be by de facto a family fight in any primary race. And so, you know, for the purposes of modernizing any party, Republican or Democrat, I think, you know, a good primary challenge is always, it's always a good idea.
And I think more people ought to vote in primaries, because that's how you get the practice of increasing turnout. And again, I think Republicans were always, you know, quietly better about this, of just getting people to get into the habit of voting and showing up for things like primaries.
But what
and
can
midterms.
Tom, there's one thing I want to ask you, then Tiziana, I'll let you jump in here. But you said that Republicans didn't necessarily have a purity test in previous election cycles. But don't they have one now? And his name is Trump.
Notice I carefully my careful circumlocution where I said, up until the past few years. I mean, now there is, in fact, a, you know, sort of white hot purity test. And I think it's bad for the Republicans. I think it's bad for America. I think it's bad for everybody. But yeah, it's definitely there now.
Well, I just think in a world where you don't have term limits, how else are we supposed to ever have new leadership ever? Right. We can't just always have a case where you wait until somebody's done and then you run. I understand the tensions here with the councilwoman and the representative, especially because she's a young, powerful leader who, by the way, has multiple aspects to her identity. She's also a woman. She's also young. You know, she's got a number of other aspects to her identity that I think figure into her platform as well. But in the absence of term limits, we should expect and embrace challenges in primaries because they make both candidates stronger. They bring new issues to the table. They strengthen the democratic system. And sometimes they're the only way to get to changes in leadership.
I only have one concern about that. And my concern, and this would be in any party, regardless of ideology, that I think you're absolutely right. I think primaries keep the incumbents on their toes because they get fat and lazy and happy and rich. And their war chests swell and they can stomp out. I mean, as a political scientist, I can tell you that normally by the third term of a congressman's tenure, he or she's pretty much indestructible.
Mm-hmm.
But I worry about the challenge being based solely on you don't look like people in the district.
Yeah,
that worries me when that becomes a major
thing. I don't think that's fair to the councilwoman, though, about what she's doing.
I mean,
fair enough. I mean, I only heard the debate and I haven't,
To be fair to her, I actually think it's we in the Boston media who have repeatedly forced the race question onto her. And that's our
in
duty.
In Boston?
Shocking.
What
I know.
Shock.
But that's our duty because of the particularities of the 7th district. Again, it's a majority-minority district, and it has never had a person of color representing it in Washington. And I always get a little twitchy when candidates avoid answering the question, which Ayanna Pressley sometimes has. I mean, she at least very forthrightly, this week was the first time I ever heard her come out after I pushed her say, yes, race does matter. But in addition, she said there's more to her candidacy. So but that's why this is so interesting, though, right? Because it's like, could it be a national issue? But it's also a highly local one. But I'm going to move on to more other stuff in just a second. But there's one last thing about this race and politics in Massachusetts question that I want to ask. I mean, especially regarding the Democratic Party, nationally, we have heard Democrats, you know, in big races like the Senate race down in Alabama, saying black women saved the party. Black women, 98% of black women voted for the Democratic candidate. And yet, you know, here we have a case in which that self same party, the leaders of that party, when a new young African-American voice comes onto the scene, None of the Democratic Party leadership has allied behind Ayanna Pressley. So it's an interesting tension here. Like, on the one hand, the party will say black women form the heart and soul of the Democratic Party nationally, but on the other hand, when a new young voice arises, they're not throwing their weight behind her. I mean, I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah, I think it is at a human level, at a species level, incredibly difficult to give up power. I think it's just really, really difficult to give up power. And I think part of the concern is that Representative Capuano has seniority and power in that chamber that is helpful and important. And when you bring in someone new, it shakes things.
Well, and also,
it's scary to give up power.
But that's not nothing.
And they don't disagree on the issues, right? I mean, that's the other thing.
Let's not just dismiss that, though, as, I mean, again, maybe I, you know, am influenced by having come out of elected politics at the city, state, and I actually worked in the U.S. Senate for a while. I mean, when you talk about seniority and power and rank, that helps the people in your district. And it's a tough thing to say, listen, we're going to start all over again with somebody who has none of that.
He's up by 13 points.
Yeah.
So I think there are a lot of folks in the district that agree with you. And I think this is the tension, which brings me back to, in the absence of term limits, other ways to handle that transfer of power, this is the kind of stuff we're going to see.
Incumbency is deadly. It is.
And it is definitely a fact of political life in Massachusetts, let me tell you. All right. So just let's take a couple minutes to pull out the periscope and look around nationally a little bit, because we do have to talk about President Trump. It's been a busy week. This week, the president's lawyers are saying that Trump wants to talk with Robert Mueller, but they've advised the president against that. Here's Rudy Giuliani on Fox News on Wednesday night.
He knows the answers to every question that he wants to ask. He's going to ask him, did you tell Comey to go easy on Flynn? The president is going to say, no, I didn't. Hey, Bob, you know it. Well, why do you want to get him under oath? You think we're fools? You want to get him under oath because you want to trap him into perjury. Well, we're not going to let you do that.
Okay, Tom, teeing that one up for you.
Wow. Well, first of all, you know, when you hear Rudy Giuliani, it's almost easy to forget that this was once a feared prosecutor in the Southern District of New York. I mean, this is like your retired uncle after a couple of drinks at the Thanksgiving table giving you legal advice that constantly conflicts with itself. But in the end, no lawyer can be better than the client. That's the problem here. Now, let's take one moment to be fair to Giuliani and even to the president, which is people say, well, the easiest way to avoid a perjury trap is to just tell the truth. And most lawyers would tell you that's not quite true. You can make a lot of mistakes, as Bill Clinton learned the hard way. You can make a lot of mistakes when you talk to a prosecutor. But nonetheless, you know, this hold me back. I really want to talk to Mueller, but my lawyers are telling me I can't. I mean, this is just kabuki and nonsense of the first order. They don't want him to talk to Mueller because the president can't stay on message. He has no serious attention span for stuff like this. And he's going to blurt something out. Go off message. And, you know, the president is a walking bundle of Kinsley and gaffes where the gaffe is to tell the truth when he's not scripted.
So what do you think?
Yeah, I think that he can't stay on message is generous. I think he lies a lot.
Oh, yeah.
He lies like as a way of life. And I think the irony of Rudy Giuliani's comments from Wednesday night is, I mean, I'm amazed at the extent to which anymore you have to talk about the things that people are saying and then what was actually said. And this is one of those moments. There's the words that came out of his mouth and then there was what was actually said, which was we put this guy under deposition. He's going to lie a ton because he does. And then they're going to have him on perjury. But that's not entrapment. Right. If you've got a guy who can't not tell the who can't tell the truth, it's not entrapment to make him answer questions.
The thing about not staying on message, all I meant by that is even if they agree that Mueller can only ask certain questions because that's the new thing. Right. It's like, well, if Mueller agrees to stay in this lane, they know the president won't stay in that lane. He'll move on to the thing he wants to talk about. And that could be anything at any given moment. So it's not only the problem of continued falsehoods and lies that are, you know, easily disprovable, which I think is one of the strangest things about this administration, but it will be even if his people negotiate careful lanes, he won't stay in them, and they know it.
Let me just ask both of you a quick question before we move on here. Sometimes I wonder if Rudy Giuliani is playing the long game, like he's playing the PR game, because I think he's banking on the likelihood that no matter what Robert Mueller comes up with, that like no charges are going to be brought. The House isn't going to do anything. The Senate isn't going to do anything. Oh, you're giving me that look, Tom. But shoring up support amongst the president's base, however, is going to be far more important and effective in the long run.
I think Giuliani's doing two things. One is he's getting things out in public that are damaging that the president has already, shall we say, been inaccurate about. And that way, when Mueller reveals it, they can fall back on old news. Rudy already told you this. The other thing, as you say, is to prime the base not to believe anything.
Yep. Which is deeply concerning and pernicious. I mean, to basically say, so here's our strategy. In order to preserve power, we're going to undermine people's faith in everything so that we can keep power just makes you a jerk. It just does. And it's really disheartening to see that strategy playing out so blatantly.
Tom, quoting 1984 on your Twitter.
I have.
So it's disturbing. All right. Well, I want to shift gears entirely and do some good news because we've got just enough time left for our hubbubs. Now, those are the smaller stories or events that caught our attention this week, but maybe didn't make it above the fold or the top of the newscast, whatever you like. Tiziana? You go first.
I couldn't resist because last time I was here, my hubbub was Alan Dershowitz complaining about the fact that he doesn't get invited to fancy cocktail parties on the Vineyard anymore.
On Martha's Vineyard. Yeah.
So ironically, this is my first week back since then. And guess who's on the Vineyard this week? Barack Obama, who not only am I quite sure is getting invited to every swanky cocktail party he wants, was actually greeted with people lining rooftops and the sides of buildings and cheering him and clapping, which both, you know, just A, let's compare and contrast. And B, both serve to remind me of everything that will never happen to me when I go to Martha's Vineyard.
I'd clap for you right now, though.
Thank you.
No, if I had a rooftop to stand, I would. Tom Nichols, your hubbub.
It's an all Vineyard hubbub today. I am sad to report, because I admire him and his work so much, that Bill Murray roughed up a photographer. But because and what makes it the most Vineyard thing ever is the photographer was Carly Simon's brother.
Oh.
So like this is just the Vineyard story of all time, right? Carly Simon's brother taking pictures. Bill Murray roughs him up because he thinks the guy is stalking him. And the punchline, he didn't know who Bill Murray was. So you have, you know, the only thing that would have made it better is if Murray had shoved him against the wall, which he did, and then said, back off, man, I'm a scientist.
Okay, it's my turn. Now, on most weeks, I usually like scramble into the studio at the last second. And I tell everyone, oh, my God, my staff, I don't have a hubbub, and they magically pull one out of a hat. The same thing has happened this week, except I have been told by them that I'm not supposed to have a hubbub. And in fact, I am required. I'm getting a little scared. I'm required to go to this piece of tape. So, guys, do what you're going to do.
Hi, Meghna. It's your director. I'm on the other side of the glass today because we, the current and former producers of the show, have got our own hubbub for you today. We all want to wish you a farewell and good luck at On Point.
When I got to Radio Boston, I was really hungry for a mentor, and Meghna, you were that for me in a way that I am still so grateful for.
Meghna taught me how to bring my whole self to work and to be more fulfilled as a result. How to use the things that are maybe nerdy or weird or different about you to make your work more interesting and vibrant.
I'm so inspired by your passion and enthusiasm for the work that you do and for your drive to get to the truth of real stories that affect real people.
From your sharp wit, your profound insights, your creativity, and your willingness to always try something new and different.
I'm still in awe of the passion that you bring to everything.
I admire your tenacity, your grit, and your smarts, and the way you do it all with so much grace and a touch of humor, just the right touch of humor.
You've taught me to be kind, to be fierce, to be bold, to chase stories, and to not give up.
You've taught me so much in the time that I've worked with you and been a fierce advocate for me personally and for my work, and for that I am forever grateful.
We've had so much fun every day, and you inspire us all, and I can't imagine this show without you, because in so many ways you are the heart and soul of Radio Boston. So good luck at On Point. We're all going to miss you. And remember, you'll always have a home here.
Gosh darn it, guys! Oh, look, they're all standing back there in the studio. Oh my God. Okay. First of all, you guys are the heart and soul of Radio Boston. Don't do this to me. But thank you so much. Thank you so much. I can't tell you how much it's been a privilege to work with all of those people who you just heard from. They have made the past 8 years an absolute, absolute joy, and I have had the best time, and I've learned so much from them. But I have to make, I've got to finish this segment now. I still have a job to do. So I love all of you. I love this program, and you will, listeners who are listening right now, I want you to know that because of the staff of Radio Boston, you will all be in excellent hands, and I can't wait to be a listener and hear all that they will do in the coming years. So, Tom Nichols, welcome. This is what we do here on Week in Review. He's a professor of national security affairs at the U.S. Naval War College in Newport, Rhode Island, and also at the Harvard Extension School. Thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you. It was an honor to be here for you with you for this show.
And Tiziana Deering, professor and co-director at the Center for Social Innovation at Boston College and a member of WBUR's Executive Advisory Board. Thank you, Tiziana.
It's been such a privilege, Meghna.
Okay, we're not quite done yet. We will be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.